This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. Joining us today are a number of growers. We have Doug Fine. He is developing a hemp project on Maui and is currently cultivating hemp in four other states. He joins us on the line this morning from South Carolina, where he's just spoke at a hemp conference and is heading back to Honolulu for the upcoming hemp conference this weekend. Also joining us is Ray Maki from Kauai. He's head of the Hawaii Farmers Union United, and he holds one of those first permits that was for hemp that was issued earlier this summer. And joining us in the studio is Melody Heidel. She's the project coordinator for the University of Hawaii's hemp development contract with the State Agriculture Department. Welcome to you all.
Mahalo.
Hey, good morning. Thank you.
So glad you could join us. And, you know, before we launch into this, I did reach out to Republican Representative Cynthia Thielen. She's been a longtime proponent of hemp as an agricultural crop. She couldn't join us today, but I spoke to her about the long road that it's taken to travel to get to this point. It was a big day back in 2016 when the scientists showed off the test plot of hemp plants at the University of Hawaii Research Center, that showing that it could be a viable crop. Here's what Representative Thielen had to say.
Hawaii has moved faster than any of the other states on hemp. And we were the first in the nation after a 50-year hiatus. We were the first in the nation to be able to have a hemp research project. And we received the DEA permit, and we had the state law in place in 1999.
Well, I was out there with you in Waimanalo when we saw just how robust those plants were.
Oh, they're amazing. And, in fact, I have the hemp stalks in my office that are up to about 10 feet tall.
Wow.
Not live. These are dried.
Right. But, I mean, you have been working so hard to push this idea that this could be a viable industry here.
Well, the thing that it all began, our sugar plantations, one after the other, were shutting down. Workers were unemployed, and it was really a very sad situation. So my son, Peter, said to me, "Mom, why aren't we growing hemp?" And my initial reaction was, "Well, Peter, that's a drug." And he said, "Hey, Mom, why don't you go learn about it?" So I did, and I spent a period of time learning what happened originally when hemp was swept into the Controlled Substances Act, even though there's no hallucinogenic properties within this agricultural crop. And it was competition. The oil industry wanted to come forth and be the basis of plastics and all of the other drywall, you name it, all of the other things. And this agricultural crop had been a competitor. And then, of course, the paper industry, they wanted to have everything be from timber because they owned the timber. And hemp would produce more paper that was longer lasting than the timber-based paper. So it was very much a competitive situation, and hemp got labeled as a drug, which it never was and never will be.
So what's your hope for this second conference?
I'm hoping that mostly that we will educate the governor and his administration, because they have been very slow to step forward and help our hemp farmers and our hemp industry move forward in Hawaii. It's been hurdle after hurdle after hurdle. And you take a look at states like Kentucky, which Senator Mitch McConnell, that is the state he represents, he is incredibly supportive of the hemp industry because his farmers are doing better than they were doing when they grew tobacco.
So you want to see...
We don't have that here. We don't have the administration like it was when former Governor Ben Cayetano was in place. He was a great hemp supporter. He signed that first bill into law. There's more progress with medical cannabis than there is with hemp from this administration. we should be having vast fields of hemp growing. We should be getting the processing equipment into place where each island would have its processing facility. We should be building any government building should be having hempcrete as part of the specs for that building. But I mean, there's so much that we could be doing, and we just aren't. The future for hemp is vast, but we're lagging.
So that pretty much sets the stage. And Melody, I just learned this morning that you actually started in Representative Thielen's office.
I did. She is the reason I know about industrial hemp. I was a legislative staffer for her back in 2000. And she said, go look in those two drawers over there and get yourself educated. And so I did a lot of outreach and education work on it and got just as excited as she is about hemp. So I've been aware of it for quite a while, and now I'm fortunate to be actually working, growing the crop. But, yeah, the issue she touches on of how long Hawaii's been in this process of trying to create a hemp industry are really important. We were on the forefront, like Hawaii tends to be, on a lot of pivotal issues, and then we kind of step back on the back burner. And in this case, like others, it had to do with Hawaii's leadership being comfortable or uncomfortable with federal regulations and their slant. So with DEA considering, Drug Enforcement Agency considering hemp a controlled substance, that I think is really what made our local leadership hesitant to push it along until now. And Hawaii's definitely taking a more regulated, tentative approach to it compared to other states.
And Doug, maybe you can chime in here, because right now you grow hemp in four different states?
That is right, including Hawaii.
So what's your take on this?
I agree completely with Representative Thielen, without whom we wouldn't be here today, by the way, alongside a few others, and Melody, who has been terrific to work on in this latest University of Hawaii project, the best in the business as far as I'm concerned. And I would say that from speaking to policy members, I was one of the folks who was helping advise the conference organizers here coming up in Honolulu about speakers, and Secretary of Agriculture Scott Enright has accepted to be one of our keynote speakers, and Senator Mike Gabbard, alongside Cynthia Phelan, are also coming to speak. And I've sat down recently with these folks at the Hawaii Farmers Union Convention on Maui, and everybody's on the same page. Everybody understands that we're not reinventing the wheel here. What makes farmers join hemp programs in every state, and why it will be no different, is when the farmers can use any genetics that they want. Right now, the farmers are limited to what the University of Hawaii Project and a few others have grown, and a few very other limited options. In the mainland, farmers have access to any hemp that meets federal hemp definitions, namely negligible THC. That's just the main. When that happens, every time that happens in the state, a ton of farmers come on board, because then we're really ready to go.
Okay, and Ray, you're calling from Kauai. You managed to get one of those first licenses this summer. How's your crop going?
It's going well, but as Doug mentioned, we're actually waiting for access to the genetics that offer some of the economic values of the crop beyond its seed, oil, and fiber benefits. And so that would be, you know, the CBDs and other active medicinal cannabinoids of plant that are, you know, legal extracts of that plant. And so, you know, something Cynthia mentioned that I thought was kind of timely in their comments and where we're at right now is that, you know, we were one of the first state to go for a research program. And then when in 99, and then finally it took till 2006 to enact, or what was the
2015.
The administrative rules were enacted in 2014 or something like that. And then it took years to come up with, you know, implementing a program. So we have rules that were attached to the final passage of the bill in the state legislature that are not modern and up to date with where other states are at with allowing the legal cultivation of this cannabis crop. So that's what we're really focusing on here in the next legislative session, is to bring Hawaii up to the standards of other states that are promoting and working with farmers to grow the crop legally and to bring the best benefit to the state, that state's agriculture.
Okay, well, we do have a number of calls already this morning. We go to Maui. Paul, you have a question? What's on your mind?
Aloha. This whole thing about hemp is really a moot issue if we legalize recreational marijuana, which we should do, because remember, now the Canadians have legalized marijuana, and if it wasn't for the Canadians in 2008, we would have gone under. So we want to welcome our brothers and sisters from Canada, legalize recreational marijuana, and the whole hemp deal, because of the cannabinoid thing and all the rest of that nonsense, will just go away. We can plant all the hemp we want and whatever hemp we want, and we can have the benefit of having legalized marijuana and all the money that comes with it, and also take care of our Canadian brothers and sisters.
Okay.
I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay. Anybody want to chime in on that one?
Yeah, you know, Paul's right, and Cynthia also mentioned it. There's more regulation and oversight of in Hawaii than there is of the medicinal THC crop. You know, once we can bring I think there's a good feeling in the state now for changing these laws, and you know, being one of the states that can actually benefit from legally growing this crop for the first time in 60 years, and it's the best opportunities for the American farmer in generations.
I know Representative Thielen did mention that we're moving so much faster now on medical cannabis as opposed to industrial hemp. She's kind of frustrated about that.
Yeah, there's a lot of regulatory oversight of a well-managed state system that, you know, allows genetic, introduction into the medical program that is, don't ask, don't tell, really. And, because they're just taking the content of THC. And that's what we want to be able to tell, is just, you know, legally grow the crop under the federal standard of 0.3% THC, and allow whatever plant genetics that will achieve that purpose into the program.
And Doug, you wanted to mention something here?
Yes, 2 points on the call from the recent caller. One is, without a doubt, cannabis, the entire plant, which is essentially the entire plant, it's an arbitrary and recent decision to call something hemp and something cannabis. And politically, the end game is to erase that delineation for a number of reasons. It's a very arbitrary and counterproductive delineation. So to that extent, I think the caller's right. However, from speaking a little bit from the trenches here of somebody who now has been marketing a farm-to-table product for several years, consulting many projects, has my own crops, and also as a journalist myself, sees a lot of hemp people and hear and listens to their stories. When you want to be a pro and really interact in the real world that has food safety standards, that has agricultural standards, that has organic certification standards, one does have to aim for a certain level of professionalism. But in the end, the caller is correct in that what benefits the industry most now, whether you're growing for any of the main parts of the plant's architecture, flower is the big gold rush now for people growing CBD and other non-psychoactive cannabinoids. But fiber, seed, and phytoremediation are also significant markets, and farmers need the widest diversity of genetics possible in order to launch that industry.
And Melody, I know you had mentioned that when we first started this test plot, the hemp was coming from China. Is that right? And then There are all these different varieties out there.
Yeah, so the university has had two different projects. The one in 2015-16, we had two different genetics that were Chinese-derived and then an Italian temperate variety. The current seed development contract that was also contractors on Maui and Big Island, we were using a different Chinese cultivar. So different seed line, it had some different, you know, characteristics to it. It was imported directly from China by the Department of Agriculture, and it has a lot of potential. There's a lot of variation to it right now. Which allows for a lot of options for selective breeding, but it also means it's not very uniform in how it's growing. But it's very vigorous. It's growing great in Waimanalo. We have some that are 16 feet tall.
Really?
With the current crop I have, our first crop that we planted in January was shorter. It was 11 feet when it matured. So it's a good genetic to play with. I think farmers will want to select from the different plants for the characteristics they want to nurture, because it is not a uniform crop. It varies in height, it varies in width, it varies in which plants are producing seed, when, that sort of thing.
Let's stop for a minute and just talk about the crop itself, because, I mean, we saw what happened with sugar. Sugar uses a lot of water. Corn seed is now a big deal here. We've had a lot of pushback about pesticides on a number of islands. I was just Googling this morning and saw a story about, I think it's in Oregon, but there was a school that was complaining about the stench from the hemp fields. So I don't know. You want to chime in there, Doug, about some of the pushback that folks might get in communities that are near where these hemp fields are growing? Are you there, Doug?
Sorry about that. I'm here. So, yes, I would say that hemp is one of humanity's longest cultivated plants. There was never hemp prohibition in many parts of the world, let's say places like Hungary, China, France. You look at the way people cultivate it now, and it is basically no different than if, you know, if you looked at an illustration that an artist did, it would look the same as the way it's done now. The idea of being scared of an agricultural crop, rather than critique people that are operating from fear, I'll say that we will, I'm very confident in 5 to 10 years we will not be having this conversation at all. It's just a plant. We're not reinventing agriculture. It's just another crop back in to help farmers make a living.
Mel, do you want to chime in here?
Yeah, well, I think Doug makes some great points, and I hadn't heard about that school complaining about the stench until you told me about it this morning. And, it just sort of made me chuckle. In my experience with our crop, it very infrequently does have a mild aroma, and not something that I notice until I'm right up in there with the plants. So I'm not sure what was happening for that school. But, again, I think it comes down to education and people understanding that just because a plant smells a certain way doesn't mean it's something to be scared of or something that they don't want near their kids. Not when you're talking about industrial hemp. You know, it's the thing that can put clothing on their backs, that can create bioplastics, that can create fuel, food, medicine. In that case, I don't know. Maybe they've got hundreds of acres right up against their back fence, and that's why they're getting a stronger smell there. But it just surprised me to hear that, to be honest.
Yeah, I was surprised, too, when I saw that this morning. It was like, gosh, I haven't heard of this concern before.
Well, it makes me kind of wonder if they just were looking for some reason to, you know, be negative about that project being
right
next door.
And we're in the test phase. When I checked the Department of Agriculture website, I saw that, while we did roll out the 3 licenses this summer, that they're now up to 10, I think, on Hawaii, Kauai, Oahu, and not yet on Maui. But I guess you're working on that one, right, Doug?
That's right. I think it's safe to say that my colleague and the terrific microgreens farmer, Vincent Mina, are trying to put together a farmer benefiting project on Maui.
Okay, and we do have a call. We have Michelle from Kaneohe. What's on your mind?
Good. Hello. First off, thank you very much for having this conversation and having somebody like Cynthia Thielen on the air who's Akamai politically as well as done her research regarding hemp. My son, incidentally, he's 45 years old, and last summer he moved to a hemp farm near Durango, Colorado, and he is really excited about the hemp industry. And having been born here, he wishes he could come home and grow hemp right here. I would love to see that be a reality for him. My question is there any time in the foreseeable future that we'll see hemp grown here commercially? And I actually own hemp fabric clothing, and it's wonderfully durable and really comfortable. And I will now go off air. Aloha.
Thank you for your question, Michelle. Melody?
Well, we're starting to grow it. That's the good thing about having these farmers licensed. I mean, it's very nascent. It's very young. But getting these farmers licensed is the first step, and I'm so glad that we're finally here. And I'm really happy for these 8 licensees and for the ones who are coming. If she was asking about when are we going to have large-scale production, that really depends on who's getting their licenses and what their acreage is like and what the focus of their project is. And then, like Doug alluded to earlier, getting processing infrastructure in that farmers can have access to. And I know I'm pivoting a little bit here, but I think especially for our small farmers, small family farms, smaller collectives, it would be really good to have some sort of collective infrastructure that they can all tap into so that it's more affordable for them compared to like a larger commercial agriculture entity that might be able to afford all of that for themselves, you know, to also have some sort of cooperative that the smaller farmers can make use of so that it's not cost prohibitive.
And I know Representative Thielen had mentioned, I think in some states, hemp has replaced tobacco.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we're talking pretty large acreage.
Yeah. And it grows easily. It's drought tolerant. It's pest resistant. A lot of good attributes that even here in Hawaii, where we have a different climate and the pests are here year-round, it can still be a really strong, vigorous crop.
Okay, and Doug, what do you think?
Sorry to talk over you there, Molly. The number of increase, you know, it's a triple. It looks good on stats, and it is good. But also the reason why personal projects that I and others are involved in are not yet applying in large numbers is, to go back to that genetics issue, it is the sticking point. When you're going to see folks apply in much larger numbers, I would not be surprised if the next time that we're talking about this industry, let's say at this time next year, that there could be close to 100 people signed up if the viable products are there. The analogy is sort of as Steve Jobs were told in the late 70s, you can design computers, but you can only design desktop computers. No laptops, don't do any cell phone development. Farmers need to be able to choose what they want to market because it's all about digital age entrepreneurialism and picking out Hawaii value-added brands. Very few farmers on Hawaii will be able to grow enough acreage to be a wholesale provider of let's say, raw cannabinoids. It's going to be all about Hawaii-branded products.
If you're just joining us, this is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. Today we're talking about our fledgling hemp industry. You can join the conversation, too, by calling 1-877-941-3689. Stay with us. We'll be right back after this break.
Do you consider yourself a creative and strategic thinker? Do you have a way with words and a love of digital communications? Are you a multitasker and a people person with management experience? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then you might be interested in our opening for Director of Marketing and Communications. Find the full job description and application details on the HPR website.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from Hawaii Symphony Orchestra's Holiday Pops at the Hawaii Theater, featuring seasonal classics and an audience sing-along, 7:30 p.m. Wednesday, December 12th. Tickets at hisymphony.org.
Aloha, Noe Tanigawa here. Join me in Hilo, Pukalani, or Lihue in February when HPR presents the best of Aloha Shorts live. Powerful readings of local literature first performed on the radio program Aloha Shorts. I'll be hosting A Night to Remember with these talented authors and actors. Neighbor Alan Ohana, reserve your seats at hprtickets.org.
Sponsored in part by Hawaiian Airlines.
You are back with The Conversation, and today we're talking about hemp. I'd like to talk about the types of products that other places are experimenting with. Everything, I'm told, from construction products to products to use in our cell phones. I don't know. Melly, do you want to start off?
Yeah. Well, you mentioned products and cell phones. They're talking about supercapacitors, which are currently made from graphene and are the little bits that power every electronic practically that we use right now, your computer, your cell phone. And so there have been some folks playing around with hemp as a substitute for graphene, and they've found that it is, if I have my numbers right, for instance, graphene costs $2,000 per gram. If you used hemp to make these supercapacitors, it would be more like $500 per ton.
Whoa.
And it's also a lot more efficient. Now, I should say that these are numbers that I looked at about a year ago. You know, maybe it's different. But essentially, it creates a much more efficient operation of it, and it costs a lot less. And you're using something that essentially, when it comes down to it, is biodegradable as well.
So is this something that we mine the ocean floor to get? Is this the same type of thing we're talking about here?
Yeah. You know, I'll be perfectly frank. I haven't had time to look up and find out where graphene comes from, but maybe somebody else can answer that question. So, yeah, it's just so diverse in the things that can be made from the different parts of the plant, whether you're talking parts of the stalk or the seed or the flower. The seed cake. So, yeah, bioplastics, supercapacitors, building materials from insulation and fiberboard to cement. There's a lot of possibility for multidisciplinary collaboration for how to use the plant and what industries to take it into in terms of product.
Ray, what are you interested in using your product for?
Mainly I'm interested in the flower portion of the plant. Doing extraction of for the cannabinoids. But, you know, I'm a 30-year commercial organic farmer. I love the idea of growing plant for its seed. And so being an organic farmer, I understand the issues of, especially when I'm trying to design and implement a monocrop, like what this crop would need to be. And, you know, the environmental stresses that we're going to have to face, especially, you know, if this thing is covered in seed, if the plant is covered in seed, then, you know, birds are going to eat 40 to 50% of that crop unless we have another design for it. But as Doug mentioned, every ounce of every bit of Hawaiian organic or non-organic hemp oil that can be produced in this state have already come. And I think that, you know, getting back to a point that you made before about the employment opportunities and the infrastructure and the co-op model for processing, this crop is like no other in that capacity. You know, it'd be like if everybody wanted to grow sugar. Okay, so they got their permit to grow sugar, and mom and pop on all these small acres were growing sugar, but now that the crop is ready, what do they do with it? So it has to be, you know, dried and processed in different ways in a more centralized facility, because you don't want to reinvent the wheel on every small facility. And then, you know, it brings labor back into the field at every stage, you know, maintenance, you know, management of the crop, delivery to its processing, added value production. It's all those are employment streams for agriculture in Hawaii that, you know, we've been getting more and more mechanized in our approach, and this crop still needs flocking.
You know, we apologize. We seem to have some audio interference. We do have these voices, like I said, coming from, I believe, North Carolina and Kauai. So, South Carolina. So bear with us. So hopefully we get this straightened out. I know the issue about the birds and seeds. I know it's often referred to as a bird tax. You just figure that, you know, they're hungry. They see some food out there and they're just going to devour it. So it's just the price you pay, I guess.
Yeah, I think you have to factor that in. We've had some loss to birds out at the Waimanalo field, but it hasn't been too extensive. But I think that's partly because we are growing a fairly small crop, and I'm using reflective bird tape around the edges, and that helps to mitigate it a little bit. For large acreage, you know, especially, I think, like Ray was saying, you just have to factor that in. But luckily, with a good seed line, with a big seed production, you know, you'll still get a good amount of seed, even if you're having to take that 50% hit. I mean, of course, you hope to get all of it. But I think as long as farmers know that going in, they can, you know, make plan around it and not be caught by surprise.
And Doug, what can you tell us, since you've grown hemp in four different states? Are there particular birds that are just, you know, voracious eaters?
In fact, my fingers are still a little bit dirty from some of those harvests. We're just finishing up some of them on the mainland, and now we go into processing, Catherine. But so I would say, as Melody pointed out, the worst depredation of any kind that I've seen on any hemp crop has been working with Melody at Waimanalo with snail slugs at the beginning, before the seeds are established, in that 10 to 15, I think, Melody's a great record keeper, percent range. The bird depredation there, as with every other crop I've been involved in, has been relatively minimal. I like to think of it in biblical terms, between the deer, some wild goats at one crop bighorn sheep, rather, in Washington State. It's like, you know, you're supposed to leave the corners a little bit for wildlife, but boy, I would get mad when I'd be in there in the morning and scare the birds off, and it'd seem like a black cloud, and I'd stress out. And in the end, it's really not anything to worry about. In fact, Melody can confirm we had more than one birds nesting that we talked about and decided to let them have their babies in the crop.
Interesting. And what about water needs? Is this a very thirsty type of plant?
No, not in my experience. Like anything, it needs moisture for germination. But after that, it has pretty minimal water needs. It can handle a heavy amount of rain, but it likes to keep its feet dry. So you need good drainage. And I did have some issue with root rot, Pythium fungus, with this last crop because of just the constant rain over the last 4 or 5 months and just not really having a chance for the soil to dry out for more than a day in between. So I did have some plant loss to that, which I hadn't experienced with our other previous January crop and with the 2015-16 project. So, you know, depending on what kind of microclimate you're in, there will be some variability with that. But just in my experience with these particular cultivars, they required, you know, very, very minimal water after the first germination and the first, you know, few weeks of the keiki, you know, getting strong if it was hot weather.
What about the wind? I don't know, Ray, what's your experience there on Kauai?
Yeah, I think wind will have to be accommodated for, but I think so infield windbreaks is something I'm designing into my systems, and but I think, you know, and some staking, you know, for a few precious plants, or, you know, especially if the branches have a lot of seed on them, they'll want to weigh down. So, you know, it's going to take a little more care than other crops. If it's planted at a wider spacing, mm-hmm. You know, usually you'll see it planted in very close spacing, and that will support it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the tensile strength of hemp is 300% stronger than cotton. With a long fiber, Melody's talking 16 feet long, you know, it's a pretty strong and resilient plant as long as it has good rooting.
I recall Representative Thielen, I think, managed to get the okay to have a flag hoisted up at the state capitol, mm-hmm. for one of the opening day sessions, I think, when we were talking about hemp.
Right, right. Yeah, she brought in one made from hemp material, like the original United States yes. flag was made from.
Betsy Ross.
Yeah.
We do have a call coming in from Kona. Natasha, do you have a question?
Well, I'm sure it sounds like many of the other callers have more personal relationship with it. It's been a long time, but I used to grow hemp maybe 30 years ago and studied its progress in merchandise development and learned that the United States military buys millions of dollars of hemp fiber for military purchases, for military uses. All of the uniforms and all of the rope and the string and parachutes, everything's got a certain amount of hemp in it because it's so durable. And why should we have to buy from another country when we can maybe in our own country, the folks can make profit and the government buys our product?
I have a question for you, Natasha. Where did you grow this hemp?
That was in California, in the northern section of California, in good old Humboldt County.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there you go. Okay. All right. Thank you so much for your call. We have another call coming in, this time from Volcano on the Big Island. David, do you have a question?
Hi. Thank you. Aloha. Appreciate this program. My point is that I believe the original intention of this law was because of its industrial power, and it would eliminate the competition, so they wouldn't allow that. And it goes against the moral principles of our country being founded on free enterprise. And by doing such an unlawful act, they enabled the fear paradigm of the military-industrial complex to become the prominent paradigm. And then they started this whole process of the global warming and the crisis that we're in now because of going against God and nature. It's very simple.
All right. Thank you, David.
Well, I just thought it was interesting that both the previous two callers brought up the military in some aspect, and I especially wanted to speak to what the that lady from Kona mentioned about the military getting hemp for a lot of their uses. Well, back in World War II, the federal government actually had a Hemp for Victory campaign where they were actively engaging farmers all across the country to grow hemp because the United States up until then had also gotten a lot of its hemp for its ropes, its sails from the Philippines, and we were cut off from that supply during the war. And so they asked American farmers to grow hemp to make sure that our military had the supplies it needed during World War II. And then it was after that that things shifted and it was, you know, no longer okay to grow hemp. But so it's just interesting how things can come full circle. And she the caller was alluding to how, you know, the military still uses those products and why not have them be sourced again from their own soil.
And Doug, what do you think is the biggest stumbling block at this point from having our industry grow?
The very biggest could be solved this week. When the federal farm bill passes, it contains a provision that completely legalizes hemp for commercial purposes. It removes any variety of cannabis plant that meets federal hemp definitions from the Justice Department's purview into USDA, the Department of Agriculture. It's just another crop. And from there, it is bottlenecks from expansion. Melody made the point a little bit earlier, too, about the processing bottlenecks. So, yes, hemp has these, thousands of potential applications in the economy. But a good idea to a viable place in the market are two different things. And so I'll give a quick example. On the fiber side of the plant, it requires immense acreage for fiber to become viable. It's one of the lowest value parts of the crop right now. If you grow organic, you might get $250 a ton, and you get maybe a ton or so per acre. So it's not a lot of money for a farmer wholesale. But there's a very big market in both hemp-based building, which requires the herd part of the hemp architecture, the inner core of the fiber part, as well as for high-end animal bedding. It's a very healthy, comfortable bedding that high-end performance horses have always, you really never stop using, especially in Europe. So this is a legitimate value-added market, but no one farmer, especially on Hawaii, is probably going to be able to develop that. So I was so pleased to hear Melody mention a cooperative mindset, because that's what I would love to see. Getting farmers to cooperate anywhere is famously herding cats. But if there's nothing else you can really do with the fiber other than weed matting, which is an important thing in itself, but to make it a commercially viable market, it might be in everyone's interest, even if they're competing with different products on the flower end or the seed end or food end, hemp-dusted macadamia nuts, whatever it is. If the co-op truck just comes and picks up that fiber
then everybody's benefiting from the eventual value-added market. So that might be a way to surmount some of these bottlenecking. It costs a lot to get the processing infrastructure going, especially for fiber, less so for seed and flower.
Do we have a hemp association here in Hawaii at this point? If we only have 8 licensees, I guess, that have been awarded. Anybody know?
Let me take that one.
Curated at the hemp convention this weekend. It's called the Hawaii Hemp Farmers Association. And so I'm getting together as, you know, a unified voice of people growing hemp and advocating for hemp and oil.
Okay, thank you. I'm just trying to think if there's anything else that you think will be front and center then at this conference coming up. We've got the Farm Bill. You know, so lots of things in play.
This is Doug. One quick thing would be the cannabinoids are tested makes a big difference. We want to speak as an industry and be treated as an industry. Now, what the industry wants is friendly testing for cannabinoids, where farmers are not going to be penalized for this kind of ridiculously arbitrary and low THC level. And that involves testing parts of the plants that contain cannabinoids, such as the leaves, which aren't as cannabinoid dense. I'm very pleased to report, and I think, Ray, you can confirm this, that when we speak with our legislators and our policymakers on the Department of Agriculture, they are receptive to the will of the legislature on these important issues, including the genetics one we've been discussing.
Yeah, I think the Hawaii Department of Ag is happy to promote, you know, this crop under good guidance, administrative or legislative guidance from, you know, the lawmakers. And they're more comfortable with it because, you know, they're not having to pioneer this. Other states already have good laws that they're managing well on their books, and their agricultural industry is thriving. You know, in Hawaii, if these administrative rules that we're talking about are enacted, in 3 years, hemp will be, you know, definitely in the top 10, but probably in the top 5 crops in Hawaii.
And is there a need for pesticides?
I haven't found much of a need myself. Certainly not for weeds. Hemp naturally is a weed suppressant. The way it grows, it just shades weeds out when they're young. And then even as the hemp plant grows taller, the weeds just aren't as established. So haven't had any need except for just a little bit of weeding when the keiki were young. The first two crops and projects that we had at Waimanalo didn't really have any pest problems at all. This more recent one, like Doug alluded to, was seeing, aside from the slugs and the snails that like to eat the little keiki, but for me it was all really easily managed with just things like iron phosphate pellets. Didn't have a lot of in-plant bugs until more recently during this last crop where we also had a lot of rain, but nothing that decimated the whole plant. And in our project, it did impact seed more than it did anything else. If someone was growing for fiber or potentially even for flower, I wasn't noticing anything that impacted those parts of the plants, just more bugs that like to nibble on the seeds.
And Doug, what about you, since you have experience growing in other states? Are there
Catherine,
pests?
I apologize. Could you repeat the question?
Because you have experience growing in 4 different states, are there specific pests in those states that attack the hemp plants?
Oh, pests, right. Mm-hmm. So I've seen very, very few, but one doesn't want to live in a fantasy world of acting again like we're reinventing agriculture, and this is something that's different from every other plant. For instance, soil preparation is very important. You have to have a healthy soil to have a healthy plant. And as well, each region will have some things, you know. Melody especially can speak to some snail and slug issues in Hawaii. We've seen, not much, even in very, very wet climates. I was privileged enough after some mechanized harvest to be able to hand harvest several small crops for building genetics, which, by the way, I would love to get to Hawaii's farmers, both in Oregon and Vermont this year. And during that hand harvest, weather, especially snow in the case of Vermont, forced us to harvest early while the seeds were ripe, but the flower was still a little bit moist, not as dry as I been used to at harvest time, and I was worried about botrytis, mold, the plants, as long as you get them dried and cleaned very quickly, they're incredibly, incredibly hardy. There are some people who I've heard in, so I'm just coming from the South right now, early farmers in the Southland will say pigweed is a bad competitor, and in a Washington crop we had some issues with mullein competing with the hemp, but in both of those cases, it was hemp that was distressed, growing in distressed soil. The hemp was actually healing the soil the first year, and by second year, especially in the Washington crop, just gorgeous. So I would tell farmers that if they do their research and grow regeneratively and take months and months to build the soil, that they have a really great chance of a successful crop in the ground. But one of the things we're going to talk about this weekend at the conference in Honolulu is then what? Because the market's brand new, we have to create and discuss what are the areas that can help farmers become lucrative entrepreneurs. Because your work is not over when you harvest. That's going to be different from the sugar era in Hawaii. Your work's just beginning as a farmer, and you got to be ready to be a marketer too.
Ray, what are you experiencing there on Kauai?
Well, I've been a 30-year organic farmer. I just know by definition, especially in a monocrop situation, I'm expecting to see the usual pests. Mites, I think, might be one of the biggest issues that I have. And, I'm waiting for the Japanese rose beetle to show up and see what it does. But, I'm anticipating organic solutions to my problems if I will have to spray. I'm certified organic, and I know that, with years of experience that it can be managed. And then I agree with Doug, start out with a healthy soil, and you'll have plant vigor, and that you won't have to manage with chemicals later.
What are the biggest myths that you think need busting when it comes to hemp these days?
Well, I think even though we've made a lot of strides in this, there's still need to re-educate people about how it does differ from other forms of cannabis, recreational and medicinal, that has a high content of THC as well. So people are a lot more aware now, but that is still part of the conversation that needs to happen.
Any other thoughts, Doug?
I would say that for those that are thinking of getting into the industry, the biggest sort of myths are that it's a get-rich-quick scheme. It is hard work. It is as hard as anything you've ever been doing. But if you're like me, it's super fun to be outside. I love field days more than just about anything, although we're almost up to processing on some of our crops now that the flower and seed and fiber are all harvested and separated and ready for delivery and storage. Processing is always a fun time, too. It's kind of like Little House on the Prairie. You gather and you bottle up your crop. And in this case, it's for the public.
What about you, Ray? Any thoughts?
Well, I agree with Doug. The threshold for really being a complete vertically integrated farm, which is everything from seed and greenhouse to field production to harvest, drying, and then further processing, and then branding beyond that. The logistical details of that entire operation is huge and really takes, help or people with experience who can manage all those details into one location. So, and then there's also financial contribution, costs and carrying costs to the crop as well.
Okay, and then we've probably only about a minute or so left, but Melody, maybe you want to underscore some points about the conference this weekend?
Yeah, sure. Well, I think it's going to be a great opportunity for farmers and others interested in the industry to learn everything from what hemp is, what it can be used for, to hear from some folks from other states who have been actively working with it, even including in the processing side, and just to kind of get a better sense of what these steps are that Doug and Ray mentioned that are really going to be need to part of a working plan if you want to be growing or manufacturing with hemp. And it's going to be a great chance to just meet people who are equally excited about hemp get some encouragement from that, make some connections. And then, of course, next door at the expo, there will be exhibitors and vendors who actually have products manufactured from hemp and other resources people can take a look at.
So where is this conference being held, and is it free?
It is not free. It is at the Convention Center. It is, I believe it's a $10 entry to the expo or $15 the day of, so encourage folks to get their tickets ahead of time online. Can I say the website? Mm-hmm. www.hawaiihempconference.com. And that's just to go to the expo. If you're interested in coming to the conference itself, which has multiple panels and speakers, all of which are listed on the website, that is a different price point. I believe, Doug, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's 150 entry. Is that right?
I think that's right. And by the way, Melody, that was amazing. I can't believe how awesome you nailed that. I also believe there's going to be comment and discounts and if you buy on the web rather than on the door, there may be some last minute discounts, and you might want to get them early because I think we're going to have a lot of people. The December 1st, is that Sunday or Saturday?
Saturday, yes. 10 to 5.
Well, we would like to thank our guests, Ray Mackey, Doug Fine, and Melody Heidel. We'd like to thank you, the listener, for joining us on today's show. And if your call didn't make it on the air during today's discussion, you can still contact the TalkBack line and leave us your comments. That number, 808-792-8217. You can also email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. And if you want to listen back to today's show, check out the Conversation podcast at hawaiipublicradio.org. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us tomorrow, won't you, for more of The Conversation.